everybody. Welcome to episode 806 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Top Cow Thursday episode, and today I'm joined by writer Zach Kaplan to talk about the return to port. It's the return of Port of Earth, one of Zach's titles from Top Cow, and it's a really interesting story. This is issue 9 as it returns for season 2. There's a lot of nuance, a lot of ideas to be explored, somewhat topical, quite relevant. You'll hear us talk about that, just about how if this were to really happen and how some of the things going on with the truth being hidden and the average Joe, you know, Joe Q citizen not really understanding what's going on or being privy to what's going on and all the workings of, you know, government and red tape and bureaucracy and things like that, and how maybe the government has our best interest at heart. Maybe the people who are making the decisions know what they're doing, and maybe they don't. They're human as well. So whenever Zach and I get together to talk comics and story, it's always a really good time. So I had a great time talking to Zach, and I'm really excited about the return of Port of Earth. So I hope you'll consider picking it up. It's a great story, and there's definitely time to get caught up, to read the first 8 issues, whether that's in trade or digitally, but there's definitely time before the issue 9 hits stand, so I encourage you to go and check it out. As always, I want to thank everybody for listening, really appreciate the support, and we'll talk to you next time.
Today, we're going to be talking about the return of what for me was a very enjoyable experience, reading a comic whose tagline had me intrigued, but I wasn't sure what to expect, and it exceeded my expectations. I'm talking about Port of Earth from writer Zach Kaplan, and Zach is coming back on the show to talk to us about the story, and we'll touch on his other title from Top Cow, Eclipse, just real briefly to begin with as well. So always great to have you on, Zach. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, it's been, I can't even believe we've known each other for like over 2 years now. This is crazy. It's flown by.
It has. It really has. It's been quite a ride.
Yeah, and it seems
for both of us.
Yeah, and it seems like I've known you forever, though. Like a short period of time, but I don't know. It also seems like we've known each other forever, so it's kind of cool.
How long have you been doing the podcast?
So we started in 2013 in February. So over 6 years now.
Yeah. I feel like you and I don't know why I feel this way, but I feel like you and I were getting started at the same, similar times. But I don't know. You would have been 3 years in, I guess, by 2016. So.
Right. But we really started kicking it up right around that same time, right around 2016, where we kind of expanded beyond just the big two. We started doing a lot more episodes. It wasn't, such a sporadic schedule, I guess.
Yeah, that would be why.
Yeah.
That would be why.
So, yeah, it's great. And I mentioned the tagline for Port of Earth, which is, I've heard you say many times to people that ask about it. But what if aliens, you know, finally did come to Earth and they didn't come to conquer or to really raise us up to the next level, but they came with like a business deal, right? And that's kind of the, where the story kicks off. And again, it's so much more complex than that. And I was telling you before we started recording that I did a total reread on the whole series before we started, and I got even more out of it than the previous couple of times I read it. There's so much there, and it's an incredible story. Are you having a lot of fun getting back to working on Port of Earth?
Yeah, and diving back in and really having already built the foundation of the first 8 issues, and then being able to really delve deeper and to go in some different directions and just expand every way possible. It's just been really awesome, and being able to also kind of look at the project very deep. I mean, I'm laying groundwork for many issues to come. So it's been a really a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah, and we mentioned Eclipse earlier, your other project from Top Cow that's kind of sort of building up to a big conclusion, so I just wanted to touch on that real briefly. How has the process been for you, knowing that you're building to at least the end for now, if not the end for quite a while?
It's been great, also a little nerve-wracking. I want to definitely do it justice, so I've been poured into the last arc of Eclipse. That's the fourth and final arc. There are four issue arcs, and I just wanted to make sure that everything ties together, that I didn't leave any threads completely unaddressed, that we felt resolution as much as feels authentic, and deliver an awesome ride and kind of go have it be both exciting and then emotionally fulfilling. And so it's been great. I think I kind of made the decision that I wanted to end around 16. That always started to plant in my mind right around 8, and we had taken that break, and when I thought about coming back, I thought 16 felt real, like I could tell the story. I could finish the story in 8 issues, and I didn't want to outstay my welcome. I wanted it to just be a fast-paced, fulfilling ride till the end. So it's been great. It'll be really surreal to see it end, but I'm very excited.
Yeah, I'm excited too, but at the same time, it's kind of that bittersweet. You know, whenever I get a new issue, it's like I can't wait to read it because I'm so excited and the story's so amazing. But the other part of it is I know it's finite, right? Like I gotta savor it because there's only a few left.
I guess I have other stories that I want to tell, and now that I'm, I started with, and, it's been awesome, but, I have other stories that I'm really excited to tell. And so it wouldn't have been, super hard to continue playing the Eclipse sandbox longer. But it just felt like it was, the best decision to let it go and to let it grow up and then exist on its own. And ask me in a year or two, I might just be like, it might feel weird not to be doing this book anymore. I have, a lot of, it's my first series and it went 16 issues. So it'll always be very, very special to me. So it'll be weird to wrap.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
Well, I mean, I totally agree with you. Sometimes it's best to, and that's one of the things about creator-owned series that I love. You can give it an ending. You know, something like Batman, Spider-Man, Superman. Those, we know their stories are never going to end. The properties are just too valuable. But and there's something to be said for a story that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it's the whole complete package. You can do a hardcover or what have you later on down the line. And people can just pick it up and know this is the whole story. This is the complete arc for these characters. And there's a lot to be said for that, and not overstaying your welcome.
I think about that too. I mean, I think about that some other creators have had books that are finished for years and years, and yet people go back to them. Mm-hmm. And I hope that Eclipse lives up to that same promise. So I think about that, and I think that's why I try to put a lot of work and passion into making sure I can deliver a fulfilling ending, so that even though it will sit on the shelf, that it will continue to be something that people want to go to, hopefully. So that is certainly on my mind, the life of it after I say goodbye to it. So yeah.
And have you been hearing from like a lot of fan reaction or support as you're coming toward the end? Are people excited to see how it all wraps up?
Yeah, I mean, the issue readers have been extremely supportive. It's been interesting. I think at this point, once you're this far into the game, there's two types of readers. The issue readers who are actually picking it up issue to issue. And then one thing I experienced on the third arc was there are a ton of readers who were just waiting for the trade. And so then when the trade finally comes out, they catch up. So I'll have two different fan reactions. I mean, there are some fans who are just, who I think were extremely, excited with, 13 and 14, which are both very different issues because 13 comes out with a bang and then 14 takes a real nice breath. And the fan reaction has been great, but I also am excited for all those trade readers to read it. Who have read when they last left it at, 3 or maybe 2 to come and just, binge through 4 or 8 issues and finish to the end. So it's been great so far. We've been getting a lot of positive feedback.
Yeah, and the last thing I wanted to ask you about in terms of Eclipse, we're talking about how we've you and I are lately over the last couple of years have really kind of expanded what we've been doing. Now your artist on Eclipse, he kind of is in the same boat. He kind of came on and really started making a name for himself, getting other work, kind of around the same time that you and I started really taking off. So can you talk a little bit about the growth from Giovanni Timpano, your artist on Eclipse?
I mean, he's amazing, and we're really hoping to continue to work together in the future. The level of detail, whether he's up close on a character's face or whether he's, full vista, his world building is just extremely creative and inventive. He just knows how to lead your eye through the page, through the panels. I love collaborating with him. We have a really, really, if you've read our back matter, we talk about the level of deep dive that we do to talk about a scene or an issue or a moment. And I'll say, he'll send me a layout and I'll say, this is great, but, can we have a moment with Cielo, and he'll nail it and just, make you feel for her. And it's just been, it's been awesome. All someone will need to do is go look in the first volume, which is amazing as it is, and then turn to the last volume, and you can see the growth. You can see the organic fluidity, that has evolved out of his work. He's brilliant. And Flavio Dispenza, who's been with us as the colorist since issue 5, just continues to get better and better too. This is his first American comic, and it's just been a joy to work with them. They're an amazing creative team. They make the book look amazing, and it's been quite an amazing to watch their growth. I can see it. I'm sure everyone can see it.
Yeah, and here's the thing. It's not like there was anything wrong with Giovanni's art to start with. Like, it was great right from the start, especially really visceral and textural. But like you said, you go look at that first issue and then look at the latest issue, and his storytelling, like just the transitions, and like you said, the fluid transitions from panel to panel, his storytelling really has improved. And, when you go and look at that first issue, I remember being blown away. Like, this is just so amazing, this world that you two built together. And then you look now and it's just like, wow, this guy, yeah, hold on to him as long as you can, because
well, I think we're holding on to each other. And I mean, we've been under tight constraints with production to really, and due to our perfectionism, to make sure that we finish Eclipse in the right way. But we've definitely been talking about future ideas and future projects, and we get excited to do new world building. And I think that Giovanni Timpano has only begun to make a name for himself. I mean, I really think he's going to be one of the greats, because I just think Eclipse was his first creator-owned book. And so I just think about giving him the opportunity to design a new world and to continue to play with his style. And, I talked briefly about this. I was attracted to his style because he had this very heavy style from The Shadow, which was very noir. And he actually changed it for Eclipse. He made it very thin lines to capture the arid nature of the environment of the sunlight. And he, I think, is a very versatile storyteller who will change his art in a lot of nuanced way to support the story. And so I think it's only the beginning. I get really excited to see him tackle new projects, and of course, I'm hoping we're talking about doing those together. So, he's brilliant.
Yeah, I agree with you on about Flavio as well, and I get excited too just thinking about okay, give me a new world that Zach has built with Giovanni and Flavio providing the visuals, and yeah, I mean I'm excited to see whether that be like doing some kind of futuristic story where instead of everything being run down, it's like all high tech and shiny, or it's some kind of a superhero world or an alien world. Yeah, like all those ideas just excite me to see what you guys come up with. So yeah, here's to the future.
Yeah, you can get excited about so many different genres and landscapes is a testament to how talented they are as an art team.
So, yeah, exactly. Well, let's shift gears here to Port of Earth. Do you want to give everybody kind of a recap of the story that we've had so far?
Yeah. Port of Earth is a story about aliens coming not to blow us up like they do in every single movie ever, but they've come with a business deal. They want to put a port here on Earth. Turns out the Milky Way is teeming with aliens who are traveling all over, but we're at the outskirts of the galactic country, and aliens have finally come our way, and they are looking for a place to fill their ships up on water, which is one of the universal or the galactic fuels, and so we strike a deal with them. They put a port on Earth, and we accept the technology to turn water into energy, which helps us dramatically with our energy crisis. And things don't go according to plan. The aliens don't always stay at port like they're supposed to. They cause us trouble in cities. Our populations clash, and it falls to Earth to protect our planetary security, to protect the alien visitors that are coming, and to protect our own human beings. And so we create a global agency called the Earth Security Agency, which is tasked with protecting humans, protecting aliens, and protecting the deal. And it's a delicate ecosystem from there. And that's our story looks at it.
Yeah, now before we dive into some specifics of what we've seen in the story so far and maybe some hints of what's to come, I want to talk to you about the story structure. We talked about this when you've been on before to discuss Port of Earth, about how you didn't want to go first person or even third person, but you really wanted to be objective. And the way the story is built, there's sort of two parts to it. We get the kind of the news interview, supposedly objective view, and then we've got the more grounded, boots on the ground viewpoint from the ESA agents or security agency. So I imagine that's going to continue in this new volume. But I wanted to ask you, both to confirm that's going to continue in this new volume, but also about were you just like gazing into a crystal ball when you chose the way to tell this story with the kind of the antagonistic look at government and news and media that we find ourselves in now? Like all of a sudden, I was rereading this today, and it echoes and feels more relevant of our current society than I can ever remember it being when I first read these issues.
Yeah, so the answer is to the first part of the question is yes. There is a dual storyline that goes on, and the first portion is a interview structure. So, issues 1 through 8, which I'll call the first season, have a CNN style journalist interviewing the head of the Earth Security Agency, Tom Rutgers, and it was a very infuriating, albeit dramatic interview. And this new issue follows the next 8 issues follow another interview with another really interesting character, and it is equally dramatic and infuriating. And then juxtaposed with this interview that kicks off every issue and kind of gives us a lay of the land, we follow the agents on the ground, and the second season expands that to say we follow the participants of the Earth Security Agency from top to bottom, from Tom Rutgers to agents and some in between. And to answer the second part of the question, yeah, it was always meant to be a crystal ball into the modern landscape of politics and business and media. And I watch a lot of politics, and I'm engaged in a lot of the feel of it all. And, you know, I wasn't interested in saying anything. It wasn't meant to be preachy or add commentary about what's happening as much as to reflect the feel and the tone. And I think one of the biggest things I took away from just being tuned into our media today is how powerless we feel. And so I wanted to convey this ironic sense that while humanity and Earth has just been connected to the galaxy, and this thing we dream of, first contact, which is supposed to like lift us all up, has finally happened, and yet we feel, by this event and by the aftermath of it all, we feel more disconnected and powerless based on the style of the storytelling. And that's just a very modern tragic spin, but it feels so authentic to me. So yeah, that was my every intention. So I'm just a sick storyteller, and that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, it works so well. There's a line that really kind of resonated with me in issue 9, where the new interviewee that's being interviewed by this CNN style reporter, Julia Campbell, she asked him a question, and his response is, well, here you report the news, you know, good or bad, sensationalist, violence, whatever, and you're selling advertising and you're making money off of it. Like, how do you reconcile that? You know, he's kind of, calling out the media. And, you know, when you think about it, you know, it makes sense. It's something that, you know, we, at least in this country, that we struggle with, right? I mean, it's all about the ratings. And is that what matters? Making money? These networks are, you know, they're in business to make money, or being objective and reporting the truth? Like, what's your priority? You know what I mean?
Well, and equally frustrating nowadays is it seems that we can't determine what's true, and we can't separate truth from people's agendas. And then you take something like aliens arriving, and language and culture and, you know, alien, it just exacerbates all that. And so it just is, it's just really interesting. You know, there's a couple of like lenses that we're looking at aliens have come to Earth. You know, first it's in business, but then it's now in the modern media landscape where we don't know what's true. And so you have to read it and form your own opinion of what you believe is true and who you think is the heroes and who you think are not. But there's a lot of that. It goes to the media, and I'll tell fans of Port of Earth, or people who are just coming in, season 1 and season 2 jumps time. And one thing that's really interesting is at the end of season 1, we have some really interesting events go on for our protagonists, for those agents. And when we rejoin them, time has elapsed. And there's a mystery as to what has happened in between this period of time. And it's a lot of fun because you're going to hear them talk about this gap, and you don't know what to believe. And that's just again, I just believe that sometimes we hear things and we don't know what's true and what's not. And I actually think it's interesting to watch a story that way and to not, and I don't think you need to know. I think you'll form your own opinion, and it can be entertaining based on either choice. So, I'm having a lot of fun with the concept of uncertain truths in storytelling. It's very interesting to me.
Well, it brings up that whole idea of truth being a matter of perspective, which, like you said, can be extremely infuriating and frustrating, because it's like, what is true? What is, you know, right and wrong? It can all depend on your, you know, perspective. And I know in the first season you played with that with these two agents where, you know, the way that it starts out, you think George Rice is, you know, one certain kind of way, and you put him in this little box, and then Eric McIntyre Mac is kind of, you know, you have your impressions of him early on, and you put him in this box, and you kind of think you know, and then just based on what happens to these agents throughout the course of the first season, it almost flips in a way, and it again yeah. becomes a matter of perspective, and then with the time jump and seeing where they are in this new season, in season two, yeah, again, it's like it feels real, it feels authentic, it feels like it could really happen, but yeah, the mystery's there, and how will their character arcs, you know, continue to evolve based on what happened in season one?
Because I guess one of the things I approach when I approach character is I firmly identify what the core of that character is, and I know it, and I know how that character will respond to conflict. But what's interesting is that doesn't always sync up with how people talk about conflict. And so what's interesting is when you take a character who says completely different things about conflict or worldview, they might have a worldview that sounds completely opposite about than the way they actually handle themselves in conflict. And that just feels complicated, but clear to me. And so it's very easy to create characters that can confuse at moments, as long as when it comes down to the action or the conflict, they make choices that feel inherently true to that character. And so then as a reader, you're watching it going, wait, which way is he going to go? But then after it all happens, you kind of realize you knew all along. Yeah. But it, as you're along the ride for him, it feels more authentic and complex. So I have a lot of, and, you know, the two characters on the ground, Eric McIntyre and George Rice, are just really interesting, complex characters because of these things. And I remember some people when they read issue one saying, "I love the world, but these characters are so two dimensional." And I was like, "Just give me a minute." So yeah, they're really nuanced. I mean, Eric McIntyre starts off seemingly like a xenophobic anti-alien character. And George Rice seems like the by-the-book guy, and those things completely disintegrate as the story goes on. So I love writing those characters. They're great.
Yeah, and I agree with you. That's why they feel so real, because they are so complex. And really, the idea of the consortium is not a straightforward one either, because right from the start of issue one, you know, season one, issue one, we get this feeling that and this is even the way Julia Campbell, because that issue starts off with the interview, as you mentioned, the way Julia Campbell even frames it is like, oh, here's this, you know, benevolent consortium, and they're coming to Earth, and they're solving our energy crisis. And you get this feeling like it's, you know, this kumbaya organization, galactic harmony. And then we quickly find out that they're, you know, much closer to like a Chevron, I think is what you said, as opposed to a UN. And, you know, you start thinking about big business, you know, apparently human or not, big business is big business, even when it comes to alien, and they're going to do and make decisions based on what's best for business or their own self-interest rather than any kind of, you know, harmonious or what's best for Earth or, you know, out of any kind of benevolent feelings, basically.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that's really interesting in the first season is that the consortium seems to be in the background, and the main antagonist seems to be the ESA. That the ESA is not protecting us. The ESA is protecting the deal, protecting the interests of the consortium that these agents are being put out to dry or being forced to make really tough decisions. Season two looks at the consortium a lot more. And suddenly we're looking at it from new perspectives in the ESA. And, you know, that asks all sorts of new questions and asks the very nature I mean, one thing I'm really excited to explore is this question, and Jace, you can weigh in. Is business bad? Is the concept of business bad? If you recall from issue 9, that interview, the person, the characters being interviewed says, it's so funny that Earth has these connotations about business words as sometimes being bad. And I think it's sometimes good and it is sometimes bad. But I don't know, Jace, what do you think? Is business bad?
Yeah, so that struck me too when I read issue 9. You know, I think he says something along the lines of, you know, when you talk about life collaborating in the galaxy, and you know, a business collaboration basically is kind of what this port is. You start thinking, okay, how is life going to advance and evolve, whether that's life on Earth or, you know, human life or what have you. It has to do with collaboration, and that's sort of the natural order of things. And so I think from that perspective, you can't really say business is bad, but I think it's like a lot of things in life. It's in moderation, right? So if you run a business and you're making, you know, good profit, I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with that. But when you start making obscene amounts of profit and other people are suffering and you're stepping on people and destroying people's lives in order to gain those huge amounts of profit, that's when it starts to feel like, yeah, maybe this isn't in the best interest. So for me, from my kind of philosophical perspective, I don't think business is inherently bad. But I think it can be like the concept of business when used immorally, I guess you'd say, or without any morals, without thinking about consequence, it can be used as kind of a tool for control and for kind of a persecution in a way. You know, keeping the elite in power, keeping the whatever you want to label them, 1% or whatever. You know, it becomes a tool just for them to kind of perpetuate their control, as opposed to improving. You know. Life improve, you know, collaborating and raising us all up, you know, that whole idea of a rising tide floats all ships. So that's kind of my perspective.
Yeah,
does it make sense?
Yeah, you're right. And it what's really interesting is it's not the concept, but the execution of it and the nuance of it. And, you know, bringing up, how does it affect everybody? And is everyone profiting? Is everyone being given a seat at the table? Are there equitable outcomes, or is it completely one-sided? It's a very nuanced thing, and I think it's really cool to look at in the framework of aliens coming and this fragile business. But I think it's so easy to say that, you know, when I pitch this idea, you talk about it, you say, well, they haven't come in war or peace, but with business, as people put their toes in the water of the story, they kind of go, aha, but the business is still bad. And it can be, or it could be good. There could be a positive or a negative outcome to the story. It really depends on the terms and the nuance of it all. And so I think that's where the fun complexity of the story lies. That's where the drama lies. I mean, you're ultimately, you know, anyone who picks up Port of Earth and dives into our world is ultimately going to find themselves asking the biggest question of all, which is this going to end up, is this deal going to work out for us or not? You know, you know, Game of Thrones, we're asking who's going to sit on the throne. And here we are asking ourselves, you know, are we going to lose our planet? Are we going to win the day? Are we going to somehow come out of this on top? Are we going to be forced to, I mean, we don't possibly believe we're going to be forced to just coexist in conflict forever, but I guess that is an outcome as well. But, you know, ultimately, if you make a deal, it will either stabilize one way or the other, you would think. So I think there's a lot of drama and fun to be had in that. That's a lot of the ground that I'm excited to explore in the next season.
Yeah, I think Manny and I did a whole episode one time talking about Port of Earth, where that's the only question we ask. It was this a good deal? That, I mean, that's all it comes down to. And it's so interesting because, as you said, in the first season, the ESA and Tom Rutgers himself come across as, you know, bureaucratic and kind of the bad guys and not having the best interests of the planet at heart. And you think, oh, how could they be kind of betraying humanity and our planet for their own best interest? Because, you know, we see in the first season how the very few that get these contracts from the aliens really benefit a lot. And again, going back to the ideas of business being bad, it's okay for some people to benefit a lot as long as everybody's benefiting at least to some extent. But all of a sudden, as the first season goes along, you start waking up to the idea that, you know, maybe these terms weren't so much like, okay, the aliens have discovered our planet, they've discovered our resources, let's make this beneficial deal, so much as it was kind of like maybe a backroom gun to our head kind of thing, like, hey, we're going to build a port here, we can help you or not. Kind of a deal. And so all of a sudden I find myself feeling bad for Tom Rutgers in a way, whereas at the beginning you just can't stand the guy. And so that idea, was it a good deal or not, I think is so fascinating, because you can come at it from so many different ways, and you've been exploring it for 8 issues so far, and I haven't gotten tired of thinking about it, and I look forward to more of the story unfolding to still try to answer that question.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to go another, you know, 20 issues on this question, and I don't think it'll get tired at all. I mean, if Game of Thrones can rivet us for 7 seasons over who will sit on the Iron Throne, I think we can do, a lot of issues on this, because there's always another point of view, another perspective. And Tom Rutgers quickly in the first season became one of my most favorite characters, because he's in charge of this new global agency, which is responsible for protecting all of Earth, protecting all the visitors that come here, maintaining our commitments in the deal. And it's just so complicated. And he has got to be the one that drives that whole ship. And when you meet him in the first season and you hear his responses and you hear how easily he can dismiss some of our concerns, it sounds extremely corrupt and callous. And I think that what's interesting is to explore why would someone, if someone is not making any gain themselves, why would someone tolerate corruption and tolerate these kinds of compromise? If you take someone who is inherently an extremely reasonable and smart person, what are they? What is their endeavor? And that is Tom Rutgers in season 2. And I think once readers pick up issue 9, they will quickly see that there is more going on for Tom and the consortium and the ESA than we have seen previously with just the boots on the ground. So it's a lot of fun to follow him.
Yeah, and again, it comes down to that concept we're talking about. If you don't have the whole picture, you know, your truth becomes a matter of perspective. And Tom, because he has more knowledge, he understands a lot more about what's going on behind the scenes with the consortium and such. His perspective on what is necessary, what is true, is so much different than anyone else really in the story, or anyone watching the interview with Julia Campbell. It's tough to say, you know, this guy's making these decisions, and yeah, it may seem callous, but it could be he's choosing between the lesser of two evils.
Yes. It is very interesting. And then you can question whether or not he's making the right choices or being effective, but it is interesting to go with him on this journey and see it from his point of view, and it only further complicates it. And so I think that's one of the reasons that I am having such a good time, and I'm so excited for readers to check out this new season, because season one allowed us to set the landscape, but now we're able to take characters like Rutgers and follow his point of view and other characters as well that really just open up the story, the complexity, and make it that much richer. So I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, kind of expanding the scope of the story, because one of the narratives in season one, it was pretty much focused on just Rice and McIntyre. And in issue nine, we meet a lot more of characters, kind of boots on the ground sort of characters. And also it becomes clear we're going to be following Rutgers. And so from the start, was this your idea for a season two to really drill into who these characters are? And kind of the core of the story in season one, and then expand it out in season two? Was that always the plan?
My thought for every season was to look at the world from a different place and a different perspective. And so for me, season one following and not to leave any world entirely, but very similar to some ways, some storytelling techniques they did in The Wire. So the story, season one is very much about the agents and their experience and the boots on the ground. And season two is very much about Rutgers and specifically the agents that he's working with. And so we are still following some of the agents on some missions and on some of the conflicts that they're facing, but to kind of go more upstairs into the ESA. But I would like to explore future stories that leave the upstairs and look at other places in this world and other perspectives and continue to round it out, so that at the very end of it all, you're left kind of having toured this journey and not leaving any characters, but just continuing to pick them up along the way and just seeing the full picture. And that's always been my vision. But then this season was about seeing Tom and continuing to see Mac and Rice, who now play a more involved role with Tom Rutgers, and then to meet other characters. There is another agent. I suppose we can, I don't know if I can tease her a little bit, but there's another pretty awesome character who I'm really, I had a lot of fun writing, a new character who works with Tom Rutgers, and she goes on a very dangerous mission right out of the gate, and she's a lot of fun to write. So I don't know how much I should give away, because I don't want to spoil it, but it was exciting to flesh out the world of Tom Rutgers and the agents he works with, and to kind of not just focus on boots on the ground, but his perspective. So yeah,
I think that's a good amount to tease. We'll just say that her name is Valencia, and yeah, she appears I'm gonna say extremely capable, and I can't wait to learn more about her as well. The other thing about issue nine that struck me is that the way season one ends, you know, you mentioned a few of the things that happened toward the end that really kind of show us that the threat level is sort of higher than just the average person on the street might realize, which is saying something considering some of these tragedies that have happened. And issue nine even raises that up a little bit more, maybe to the next level. And I don't know if it's because it feels a little more threatening, just the dangers, the potential consequences of the port. They seem to be spiraling. I don't know if that's why it feels like season one. I mean, I know we're only one issue in, feels like it's paced a little quicker. This felt like a very jam-packed issue. Is that something you're aware of, or did it just so happen that this first issue was fast-paced?
Yeah, I mean, I am aware, and I think it's because season one, once we joined the story, you know, the first issue, the first couple issues, we had to approach that with a lot of suspense and intrigue and mystery. What is the port? What is the consortium? What's really going on here? Seeing it from the agent's eyes, meeting Rice and McIntyre, learning a little bit about them. It was all not slow burn, but you know, it was, we were building everything up. Now we're there, you know, we are in, we're in the shit right now. And, you know, there's more bad things happening. There is an alien outbreak that is, hitting, Seattle. The level of danger that the incidents have been offering, there's more, deaths, in the past year, since season one. And it's just more, everything is, it was important to ratchet the stakes. It was important to throw these characters right into the deep end. There's plenty more to pull back on. And it's kind of funny because when I hear you say, you feel like things are, you know, really getting ratcheted up, I actually think about where I see the story going and think that, well, you'll probably be feeling that, more and more and more and more, and that will never go away. But, it was necessary and easy to just dive in, and we're following more characters. You know, Porter, the first season, we met Tom Rutgers through the interview. Now we're dramatically following his point of view. We're also following Mac and Rice's point of view, and we're following this new character, Valencia's point of view, and a couple others are thrown in there as well. And so seeing the world from more characters, feeling things are getting more dire and higher stakes, the pacing is faster. And it's a lot of fun to write. I think I get stoked by that. And I think it also gives me more freedom because I've already had enough things established to be able to do something that's really fast, and then to do something that takes a minute and is slow. There's, you know, in the next few issues, there are some slow moments where you're going to get to catch your breath, and then it's going to ratchet up again. You're going to go, oh, wow, I can't believe that happened. So, I am quite aware of the faster pace of the second season. So I would say to people, if you enjoyed the first season but wanted it faster, you're going to get it. The second season is pretty fast paced, and still just a ton of character and a lot of new perspective. It feels like that's something that you know happens a lot in most series that as they go on, they have the opportunity to pick up the pace. We certainly took it. So,
Yeah, it was great because, as I said, in doing the reread, the first season, what really strikes me is how many fascinating ideas there are, and how you really kind of connect with the characters, with the events that happen, and you kind of feel for them, what they're going through, especially Rice. And then the second season starts, and yeah, like you said, everybody's just thrown in the shit, and you know, the hits keep coming. And I as much as I love the first season, you know, I think it's outstanding. Issue 9 is my favorite issue of the series so far. It's just like, it's like, uh-oh, here we go. So,
I can't wait. Yeah, and I think there's a lot of room to operate season two at a really heightened, higher stakes pace, while at the same time, you know these characters. So Rice and McIntyre and Tom and all of these characters can have smaller moments that feel equally complex and nuanced, and you really feel for because you know them and you've been on this journey with them. But it doesn't take as much to really hit those as well. So, I'm having a great time writing season two, and I think that's one thing I'm really excited for. Hearing you say that 9 was your favorite, I feel like that could a lot of people could. But you know, I don't know. I don't know if you can dive in on 9. I'll be curious to see if there's any readers who start on 9 and don't go and haven't read 1 through 8. I feel like you might be able to, but you would be missing a whole lot of pretty helpful backstory.
Yeah, I think it goes back to that idea of perspective. Because you're not gonna get to really see. You're not gonna get a chance to dislike Tom Rutgers because he's actually sort of likable in this issue. He almost seems like he could be a hero character even. So I think you'd miss out on some perspective. So I mean, not that you couldn't do it, and maybe listeners, as this comes out on Top Cow Thursday, the issue 9 is going to be in comic shops in about a week, the following Wednesday when this hits. So if you don't have the opportunity to go back and pick up the first couple volumes, season 1, pick this up and flip through it, and it may be something that you say, let me go back and pick it up from the start, either digitally or the trades are available. I really encourage that. But I wanted to ask you, Zach, about the fact that you still have Andrea Moody on, which thank God, because that guy is just, he's built an incredibly visceral and realistic world. So was there ever a doubt that he was going to come back? Was it always, you guys always plan to keep on working on this together?
Yeah, I mean, he's done a killer job. And I mean, one thing I think I've actually talked to you about, Jace, is how, he has this really emotive and edgy kind of style. And it felt very visceral. And at first, maybe not what you would expect for Port of Earth. It felt like, someone more structured like Giovanni would be the person, an artist that you would want to build this very intricate world, but there's something about the powerlessness that we're talking about and this kind of tone about media and this frenetic kind of on the ground feel, and Andrea really captures it, and so he's just been the perfect artist for this book, and it's been just killer to work with him and to continue to draw the port and all these crazy aliens with him, but also these characters, and he's a great artist. He's done so many projects. It's kind of amazing. He's got a lot of amazing books out there. He did Infinite Dark and Fearscape and Rebels, and he's always working on a ton of stuff. But he always sends amazing pages in. And then something we did for this next season is we brought on Jordan Boyd as our new colorist. Vladimir did a great job. But Jordan Boyd, you guys might know him from Deadly Class, Invisible Republic. And he's just been a dream to work with. It's just a really awesome style, and it fits perfectly with Andrea's work as well. And so, the art team is firing on full cylinders and just killing it. And the artwork speaks for itself. It's amazing.
Yeah, I did notice a little bit of a different tone. And I when I started reading issue 9, I went back and I'm like, oh, it's not Vladimir, it's Jordan, whose work I've always enjoyed. I was thinking, yeah, this guy's a really talented colorist. And again, not to say there's absolutely anything wrong. Vladimir did an incredible job really injecting a lot of kind of mood into the first season, which sort of worked with what specifically Rice went through, kind of his character arc. It sort of suited that. And now that I feel like we're ratcheting up the action, a little, just a slightly brighter palette from Jordan kind of suits this tone that I think you guys are going for really well also.
They're both great colors, and it was an interesting way to punctuate the second season and give it just a little bit of its own feel. And readers will notice we actually changed the color of the logo. The logo for 1 through 8 is orange, and 9, it's a darker red. It's kind of a darker orange red, which was our way of kind of marking the delineation of the seasons and kind of saying this is a slightly different a part of the journey. And so bringing Jordan on board was another way to kind of continue to make this part of the journey feel like its own. So he's amazing.
Yeah, I did notice it was more of a reddish logo, and my thought was, well, here we're ratcheting it up to the next DEF CON here. More.
Well, I won't hide it. After this season, in the next season, we'll change the logo again, and I think it will continue to get the DEF CON levels will continue to increase. So yeah, things have got to get worse before they can get better. I'm sorry to say, things are not looking good for Earth over the next couple of years with Port of Earth. We'll see if we can survive it, but there's a lot of jeopardy to be had. So, that logo will be getting darker and darker.
Yeah, I don't want to keep you too long, Zach. I know you're busy, but I do want to talk about one last thing here. Perhaps the most realistic and somewhat terrifying aspect of the whole concept of Port of Earth is how realistic it feels in terms of, yeah, this could actually be the way that it happens. And that personally scares the crap out of me, because me as somebody who's, I'm nobody, I wouldn't even know the nuance that was going on behind the scenes and why decisions were being made, and really understanding the real threat these aliens could pose. But I could completely see those in power, first making decisions based on keeping their own power, keeping their own, solidifying their own power base, and thinking about how rich they were going to get, and then soon finding themselves in over their head, and then all of a sudden, here we are, alien outbreaks, cities being destroyed. So it's a great story. I hope it's not keeping listeners readers up at night. But have you thought about that, just about how realistic and this may be?
Yes, and it's the best compliment I get for the series. I really think that if aliens are to come here, that we always think that it's going to be easy, and the aliens are going to act the same way, and it's going to be clear, and we're going to watch it on our TVs, and we're going to know everything that our leaders know. And it's all going to happen so smoothly. And the aliens are all going to behave the same way. It's just, that's not real. And I think that we can't conceive of what would happen if aliens actually came. But human beings never talk about that event in a mature way. It's always two-dimensional. And I think if you actually take a moment to think about all the ways it could really go, it's not that they come and blow us up. How easy is that? If they just come and blow us up, that is so easy for us. We just die. It could be a lot worse. And I think it just, I don't know, for me, it's my modern view of the world that, when I was growing up, I don't know if everyone feels this way, but when we were all growing up, it feels like we had certain ideas, like our leaders always protect us or represent our interests.
Yeah.
This is what I had growing up. Now or that our leaders knew what they were doing all the time, or that we're being represented when things happen, and that we have control over our future and our fate. And I don't know, those seem like 20th century ideals that don't fit anymore. And I certainly don't have any answers. Port of Earth is not preaching any answers at all. There are no answers to be had, but there are certainly modern realities that just, it doesn't, it, you know, there are no political parties in Port of Earth. It doesn't need to be have any red or blue. It's just these concepts that you don't always know what you see on TV is true. You don't always know if the person who's negotiating for you is working out of your best interest or not. And when you apply all these very mature modern realities to the concept of aliens coming, it is very scary. So all I can do is write about it.
Yeah, wasn't it Stephen Hawking that said, when they come, we're just screwed, or something to that effect?
Yeah. But I think, you know, he actually portrayed it as, you know, elephants walking over ants.
Right.
And, you know, that they will be so technologically advanced that they will just walk all over. So we would never stand a chance. And I actually think that, yes, you know, subjugation and slavery and annihilation are all very scary thoughts. But Robert McKee is one of my favorite writing gurus. And one of the things he talks about for writing fans up there is called the negation of the negation, which is to say the worst thing in the world is not slavery. The worst thing is slavery portrayed as freedom.
Right.
But the worst thing is the horror that you're thinking of portrayed not as the horror you're thinking of. And so what's worse than having aliens come and occupy us? Aliens come and occupy us, and no one calls it occupation. That it actually feels like they say that you have power, but you don't. They say that you have freedom, but you don't. They say you're in control of this, and you're not. That the hypocrisy is what makes the crime that much more horrific. And so, and that is very modern. And so I just feel like, yeah, Stephen Hawking warned us about aliens, but he didn't warn us about alien business people. And that is very scary.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it happens gradually over time, and then all of a sudden you wake up one day and realize, wait, how did we get here? Yeah, we really are screwed, and we kind of did it to ourselves. You know, we shook on it, and now look where we are.
Yes. Well, I mean, human beings in general right now have a very hard time getting knowing what we're watching. And so, you know, you read Port of Earth and you see these things happening. Season 2 lets you in a little bit more. Season 1, you're watching it all unfold on the news. Season 2, you get to ride along with Tom Rutgers and see a little more of the inside. But it's all that more horrifying to think, what if we made a deal that we have? How much control would we have, and how much influence would we have, and would our leaders even know what they're doing, and what would the people on the ground be represented? It's you know, I guess in a way, Port of Earth is a little horror as well in this societal horror.
Yeah.
But it's happening so slowly that you don't recognize it. You know, you're distracted by the cool looking aliens and the guys with guns and the fun action and the twists and turns and all these reveals. And next thing you know, you're saying what you're saying, which is, wait a minute, this could happen. And this is really scary. And is anybody prepared to handle negotiations with aliens, or how would we handle this, and who would represent us, and how would we as a population explore suddenly, you know, the aliens wanting to come and, you know, put a port here and interact with us in the most early stages of relationships. So this is why I love writing. It's so fascinating to me.
Well, we look at the world around us today. We don't even need the alien part. You can look around at the business part and go, wait, what are we doing? Already starting to feel like, how did we get here?
Yes. Yeah. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. And so I think that's one of the best compliments I get, is that, this could happen. This seems like the most likely outcome people have seen. It's scary and a lot of fun to write.
Yeah, and do you have any other projects that you want to tease, or anything else that you're working on, Zach? I'll give you a chance here as we wrap it up.
Right now I'm really focused on wrapping up Eclipse in the right way. You know, it's 14 just came out, so we've got two more to go, which is crazy. Port of Earth is, you know, I'm spending a lot of time making sure that the whole season that we're planning here is really come together. I have a lot of new ideas and new projects that I'm excited to that, you know, are in the works, and I'm excited to bring to readers. But unfortunately, nothing that is so close to the popping that I could tease it in any way. And you know, when I you know, you can appreciate this, Jace. When I launched in, and you know, Eclipse went, and Port of Earth went, and Lost City Explorers, and there's a lot of opportunity, and I was very excited to continue to do as many as I could. And I always use the analogy of spinning plates. And I was, you know, I had one plate spinning and another plate spinning, and I started to get more. And at the point, I had to say, well, wait a minute. I do have to make sure that I don't want Eclipse or Port of Earth to crash or diminish in any way. I mean, it's important to me to make sure that these stories are amazing at start to end as much as I can. So, you know, if that means a few more months before something new comes out, to make sure that what I have going on, that I fulfill my ability to do the best I can. So, I have a lot of new projects I'm excited to get going, but, you know, they're on their way in due time. That's all I can say.
No, fair. That's fair enough. And it's a good point. You know, there's that tendency, and this is maybe a piece of advice for any aspiring creators. I know we have a lot of listeners that are looking to break in. It's important to remember that, you know, you've got to put story first. And if that means, you know, putting something else on the back burner in terms of when to get something started, it's an important lesson to learn, because so many times you hear people give freelancers the advice, well, you got to make hay while you can, like take every opportunity, don't say no. But if the story's going to suffer, then sometimes you have to say no, because once it's out there and your name's on it, that's it. I mean, there's no take backs. So it's an important another important lesson that you have to learn is when to say no.
Yeah, or at the very least,
not right now.
Yeah,
exactly.
Give me a minute.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's been great chatting with you as always, Zach. We'll talk again soon. And you know, the door is always open.
Thank you, Jay.
Anytime you want to come on.
Thank you so much.
To announce those new projects.
Port of Earth comes out. April 17th, I'm on social media on all platforms, Zach Capps, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Let me know what you guys think.
Yeah, and so you have the weekend, right? This is coming out on Thursday. You have the weekend. If you haven't read any Port of Earth, get out there, pick up Volume 1, Volume 2, read the whole Season 1, and you'll be ready for Issue 9 when it hits on the 17th. Once again, I want to thank you, Zach, and thank all you listeners for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.